Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This episode of Happy Hour is sponsored by Gold Star. Gold Star has a great selection of affordable tickets to all sorts of live events, including theater, with Broadway and Broadway national tours, concerts, comedy, dance, and more.
The first 200 listeners who use the promo code HAPPYHOUR, one word, all caps, will get $10 off their purchase at goldstar.com/happyhour or using the Gold Star app.
Jimmy, didn't you fall asleep during the Tony?
I did. I absolutely did. Well, not during. They were happening somewhere else.
Uh-huh.
I was asleep.
And you were asleep. You didn't.
Yep. I've caught up. Never fear.
You didn't miss much.
I didn't. I have seen that now. And my experience of the Tonys, right, has been watching the Once on This Island performance about
over,
40 times.
And over and over again. Yes.
That's it. I watched the Band's Visit one like twice.
Yeah. It's beautiful. It's just fantastic. I was surprised with the Band's Visit one how great a job they do in filming it to make it feel super intimate.
Yes.
On the Radio City stage. Yes. I guess the same with Once on This Island. They did.
They built the circle in the square.
The
on
whole
the stage.
Thing. Yeah. A theater in a theater. Circle in the square in Radio City Music Hall.
Welcome to Jim and Tomic's Musical Theater Happy Hour, your weekly podcast with wigs and whiskey.
That's a good one. Because I've
already
it.
Had the whiskey last week. We're out in Scotland now.
Well, you know, there's just plenty of whiskey to go around.
There is so much. It's all good.
Speaking all of, good. What are you drinking today, Jimmy?
Let's go for, I don't know, like a sidecar?
Ooh, that's a good one. I had two.
Does that make sense?
That does make sense. I was either going to be drinking just a small triple or a daiquiri with honey.
Yes, that would be appropriate. Mine was just of the era.
Or some gin from a bathtub. There's just lots of alcohol in
yeah, there
show.
Is. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, gin from a bathtub. That's a good one.
Gin from a bathtub. 10 cents.
Wow. We say two bits. That's funny.
Oh, yeah. We wouldn't say two bits. That doesn't make sense.
No.
Yeah. Shit.
Well, we also don't say gin from a bathtub. Savages.
Oh, man.
Anyway, you have a quiz question, I believe,
I
sir?
Do. A laundry list of actresses were considered to play the title role in this musical, including Mary Martin, Ethel Merman, Gwen Verdon, B. Arthur, Doris Day, Elaine Stritch, Lena Horne, and Judy Garland. It's my own version of the diva polka rap. But instead, the role went to a relative newcomer on the Broadway scene. What show, Jimmy?
By the way, that's a new video idea, just to let you know. You put that one in a pin. That show could only be MAME.
Light the candles. Get the ice out. Roll the rug up. It's today. Though it may not be anyone's birthday, and though it's far from the first of the year, I know that this very minute has history in it. We're here.
It's a time for the
shoes up, strike the band up, it's today.
And we're living, and we're welcome.
I don't know how you're not going to put the title song right here.
I was going to put it's today. Like, why would, like...
Because you said MAME, and then it'd be MAME. Whatever.
Guess that's not how it works. That'll be the closing one, Thomas.
No.
Don't. But my seamless editing of you singing into that song was
to die for.
Spotless.
To die for.
I spent far too long making that good. Yes, we are doing MAME. Hooray. Music and lyrics by, of course, Mr. Jerry Herrmann, and the book by Jerome Lawrence and Robert Edwin Lee.
Who goes by Robert E. Lee, strangely.
Bertie Lee.
Bertie Lee. It's based on Anti-Mame by Patrick Dennis, the book, also yep. the play, also the film of the play. Yep. They all just kind of happened around the same time in the 50s.
Yeah, absolutely. And it opened up on Broadway in 1966 with, of course, Miss Angela Lansbury, who was the woman from our quiz question. And it ran for a whopping 1,500 performances, which is incredible.
And it opened in the West End in 1969.
Yeah, great year. And at the Tonys, the 66 Tonys, Angela Lansbury won, Bea Arthur won, Frankie Michaels won for Best Supporting Actor. No creatives, but that's fine.
Yeah.
They all did very well.
And there's a film, but, you know, we'll get to that.
We will get to that. Ha ha ha. Okie dokie. So, well, the story of Mame, it's a windy one.
Yeah.
It's sprawling.
Super episodic.
Yes,
takes
absolutely.
Place over decades?
Absolutely. Yeah, about 20 years.
Yeah. Mame Dennis is a Manhattan socialite. Who is, you know, living in the roaring 20s and throwing her gin-filled, like, socialite parties when yep. who should knock at the door but her only living relative, Patrick, her nephew, who has yep. been bequeathed to Mame by Patrick's late father. And Mame takes Patrick on a wild life through his upbringing, everywhere from Manhattan to the South to Shangri-La. Yep. And, you know, it's their misadventures kind of through Patrick's upbringing. Does that seem pretty
accurate? Definitely. Definitely. And it sort of comes to a close when Patrick's all grown up
mm-hmm.
And he meets Mame again, and she finds that he's kind of become the person she never wanted him to be.
Yes.
And it's all about how she kind of finally shows him the way.
Yes, exactly. There is, you know, Mame is exotic and artistic and bohemian. And
yes.
Patrick, and really Patrick's father, was decidedly not. And so yep. Patrick is kind of, you know, put under Mame's care with a huge set of caveats enforced by Mr. Babcock, who is in charge of his trust, Patrick's trust. And so yes. we kind of see the tension there between Mame's bohemian lifestyle and Patrick's back and forth between wanting to become his Anti-Mame and not wanting to become his Anti-Mame.
Exactly. And I've got some definitions for later for that.
Ooh.
Some literary definition.
How
Hello.
Intellectual.
Way! That's what we are. But here, shall we dive on into the Roaring Twenties?
Let's do it. I'm Charlestoning in my seat. Charlestoning? Can you verb that?
Yeah.
Excellent. I'm Charlestoning in my seat.
Excellent.
Oh, Vera, I can't wait to hear that overture. Tell me about the show.
Well, it's this terribly modern operetta about a lady astronomer who makes a universe-shaking discovery. I have a little secret I'd like to impart that I hope doesn't give you too much of a start. Though it's shocking, it's completely true. I know it isn't gossip or rumor, of course, for I've had it from quite a reliable source. And I'd like to pass it on to you. The man in the moon is a lady. A lady with lipstick and curls. The cow that jumped over cried, "We're jumping, Jehovah." I think it's just one of the girls. She winks at the
stars. I would quite like to see you, Charleston.
You know, I actually, it is a long running joke in my family that we will break into the Charleston at random moments. You think I'm making that up, but that's actually a thing that me and my brothers do all the time.
And you actually break into it?
Yeah, when in doubt, Charleston.
Okay, right now, just for my own benefit, can you get up and
absolutely
do
not.
Why not?
Because I'm very comfy right now.
Ugh. I was even kidding. Well, tomorrow at Pride, I want videos.
Plenty of Charlestoning. Charlestoning at Pride.
You. I love it. It's one of my favorite styles of dance to do.
Yes. Yeah? No, it's just so invigorating. Great. This whole era, the 1920s, this, you know, flapper Charleston style dance. Oh, yes, please.
Yeah, absolutely. None of the other stuff that was going on, but just that.
Just that. That's all we need.
All the behind closed door stuff is the best.
Yes. Jimmy, can I read to you a stage direction from this musical?
Yes.
This is from the very beginning. They're describing the partygoers at Mame's first big party.
Great.
Right now, she like, this is, you know, our meeting of Auntie Mame and the context in which she lives kind of before Patrick enters her life, or like right as he enters.
Yep.
And this is a stage direction straight out of the libretto. Now Mame is down the stairs greeting and kissing guests who include the half-drunken but chic operetta star Vera Charles, a bearded Orthodox bishop, the athletic Ralph Devine, the suave publisher M. Lindsay Woolsey, and people who might be Floyd Gibbons, Marian Anderson, Radcliffe Hall, Paul Robertson, Lady Mendel, Fatty Arbuckle, Bob Benchley, Texas Goonian, I don't know who these people are, plus... Yep. Assorted flappers, gangsters, and even an Arab.
Yep.
I think there is a very interesting tone that this musical sets of like an anti-racism progressiveness of a bygone era.
Yeah, it's weird because like when I read that stage direction, it was that so I was like, oh, because it wasn't. I can't believe that, because right. I get what they're meaning by that.
Right. They're saying, you know, Mame invites everyone to her parties.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And like the part, you know, we've got anyone mixing with people like Fatty Arbuckle, who's a big director. He's the only one of them I know, but I thought I'd pull that out. You know, like the hoi polloi.
Right. Exactly. Like the elite of Manhattan, but the exotic elite.
Yes.
And there is certainly, you know, an interesting undercurrent through this show that it is, I find it difficult to tease out about, you know, Mame is a contemporary icon and tries to stay up to date. She's always updating the paintings in her house and is like, fills, you know, surrounds herself with the outcasts of society. Sometimes, like the, but it is interesting to see that written in the 1960s, where like there's that dichotomy of they want this to be progressive and new, of course, but it is still the 60s, so there's still like, you know, we looking back on it now, it seems almost naive.
Yeah. Wait, what do you mean, like on their part?
Yeah, like I think the thing that stands out to me the most is so Mame falls in love with Beauregard, you know, a fine Southern gentleman, and it is quite the to-do that Mame goes to visit Beauregard and his gigantic family on their Southern plantation. And while it is interesting because there are moments where characters in the show are portrayed as explicitly racist.
Yeah.
No one on the plantation is portrayed as explicitly racist. But they're like, with all the trappings of this kind of Southern feel that it always, you know, makes me nervous, rubs me the wrong way a little bit. And the whole conceit is that Beauregard's family isn't going to appreciate or accept Mame because she's a Yankee. She's a, you know, an uppity society girl, and that's not how we do things down here. But then through, you know, hilarious happenstance and being able to ride a horse accidentally, Mame proves herself to this giant family, and suddenly the entire South accepts this Yankee Manhattan girl as one of their own. And that is like, you know, it's like the authors were like, and then that's how Mame solved Southern racism, or, you know, Southern lack of acceptance, by just being funny and nice and a go-getter. And like, clearly that's not the intent. Jerry Herman just wants to write a song where you can cakewalk and kickline.
Exactly.
But there's something about it that, like, seems naive.
Do you think it's just too idealistic? Is that what you mean?
I think it is, you know, I think it is something that would hold the musical back today. And why we don't see a lot of contemporary revivals. I also think it's the sort of thing that in 1966, the New York audience was like, because also for a New York Manhattan audience, it is easier to portray Southern people as slow and stupid because they're far away. We talked about this in maybe Scottsboro Boys. And so, like, there is that, you know, it's almost like a Yankee savior story.
I feel like it kind of comes out of nowhere, that whole section.
Yeah,
because Beauregard could be anyone,
right? Exactly.
He doesn't need to be a plantation owner in the South. It's quite peculiar that he is. So I remember the very first time I listened to it. Now, it's actually quite weird. So the first time I listened to this was in about 2009.
Okay.
And then I didn't pick it up again until a month ago. So
fascinating.
Yeah. Back in 2009, that was when I was like becoming a nerd. And so now being a nerd,
right?
At first I was a bit like, oh, I did not pick up on that the first time. And it's so left of you, because it also never gets brought back again.
No.
In Act 2, that whole story's stopped.
No, it's gone. I mean, like, Beauregard's dead at the end of intermission.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's such a... I think that's one of, you know, maybe separate from some of the more social issues for this thing, I do think that is an interesting kind of piece of fallout of this being such an episodic musical, is that so many things happen and then never come back again, and are, like, only barely related to the story. Like, the man in the moon is a lady. Like,
exactly.
Hilarious, wonderful, and could also be totally cut and none of the plot would be lost.
Totally.
None of it.
Absolutely. Because, all of these things, I think, just kind of build up to show you who Mame is. And, like, these are Mame's ideals.
Yeah.
Like, this is the Mame way.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting because, like, it almost feels like you could go out and collect the Mame comics.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean? And like, oh, and this is the one where Mame saves the South.
Right.
Oh, this is the one where Mame stars in a vaudeville show.
Right.
Like,
yeah, exactly.
If that's what it feels like.
It feels like a serial.
And that they've just kind of brought these all together. I think it was supposed to be a TV show at one point.
Interesting. I would.
I think I would
very much enjoy that.
Yeah. But I don't know the history of it, but I have 100% read that somewhere. And it does have that episodic, like, because she is this very strong character who has, she's almost like Kimmy Bloody Schmidt.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean? And huge differences, but just in that sense, it's like, well, what does Kimmy get up to today?
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
no, I think
let's put Kimmy in this situation. Let's put Mame in this situation and see what she does.
I don't know where I was reading it, but it was a quote from Jerry Herman. And he said, Mame may not always know where she's going, but she damn well is going to get there.
Exactly. Yeah.
And
I've read that.
It's such a great descriptor.
But
then it is interesting that, like, some of these, you know, quote-unquote progressive issues come out, but because it's so episodic, it's like, bloop, That's it. Done. Move on.
Absolutely. It's just like, yeah, it's just like she waves her magic mane wand and then trots off to the next one.
Exactly.
It is quite interesting. And I guess, like, as a sort of a storytelling point of view, obviously she goes on these, like we say, misadventures.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite interesting that the kind of the main story, this her main project, the main magic wand throw of her and Patrick,
mm-hmm.
is the only thing that could ever be in jeopardy.
Yeah.
But yet that's like the strongest relationship that runs through the whole
show. Yeah.
So that's quite smart. I quite like that.
Yeah, it is interesting. I find it interesting because episodic musicals stereotypically don't do well. Episodic plays don't do well. You know, it's the Greek unity of time. And the fact that this was as popular as it was and still kind of weaves this, you know, what's the comic book of the week main story into two hours of theater is fascinating. Like, I want to...
Yeah.
It is... Like, why? You know?
Yeah.
It's got to be something more than just catchy songs. Or catchy thongs.
catchy thongs! Woo!
I do think it speaks a lot to just... how wonderfully clever the character of Mame is.
Absolutely. It's such an iconic character.
Yeah.
And I feel like there will be eyes rolling out there because, like, oh, look, it's two gay guys talking about Mame again. But that's fine. And we'll talk more on that story later. But on my readings, readings of Mame, I stumbled into Greek literature.
Fascinating.
And the concept of Apollonian and Dionysian stories, or like a dichotomy.
Okay.
And I think it was Nietzsche, and I'm not even kidding, who kind of propagated this idea. Yes, we're talking about philosophy and Jimmy Talk. Just because he's happier.
What did you expect?
But just in the sense, and I think this is just what I mean is it's a really good example of this because mm-hmm. it's this kind of concept of Apollonian Dionysian dichotomy.
Uh-huh.
In the sense that Apollo and Dionysus, two Greek gods, had a sort of a rivalry because Apollo represented sort of a stoic and rigid way of life,
mm-hmm.
whereas Dionysus, who's the god of wine and merriment, very much, you know, lived in the world of freedom and wildness and, you know, chthonic craziness.
Mm-hmm.
And these two had this kind of, you know, this battle.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it gets talked about a lot in gay culture.
Yeah, okay.
Because of our own kind of dichotomy, or certainly a more historical dichotomy that we've had of,
mm-hmm.
you know, living in the closet and having this other life that we have,
right.
you know, in an underground leather bar.
Yeah.
And then coming out and then
stereotyped
going to work.
As raucous and, you know, totally no holds barred. Yeah.
Absolutely. And so I think it comes into play in Mame.
Yeah.
Because Mame is 100% a Dionysian character.
Mm-hmm.
Like, 100%. She has there's nothing stopping Mame.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? She is a barrel that is rolling.
Yeah.
And it will just keep on going.
Yeah.
And she openly says this and she openly celebrates this.
Yeah.
But then you have these other kind of characters in her life,
mm-hmm.
which present this more Apollonian
mm-hmm.
Vibe.
Yeah.
So you've got Mr. Babbit. I can never remember his actual name.
I was about to say Mr. Babadook.
It is Pride.
Babcock.
Speaking of gay icons, the Babadook. Mr., you know, who is this idea of like staunch conservatism,
mm-hmm.
bully for you, etc.
Right. But like portrayed as this, you know, he is the antagonist.
Yes, absolutely. But doesn't present an idea that is antagonistic.
Mm-hmm.
It's just different. Do you know what I mean? It's different to the one that we're celebrating in this story.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing wrong with sending your child to a normal school.
Right. I mean, he does have lines like, I'm going to turn this boy into a God-fearing Catholic if I have to break every bone in his body. Like,
absolutely.
He's not the brightest shining light.
No, but then the thing is that's still quite a paternal.
Yes, true.
Thing to say, you know what I mean? And there are families where I'm sure that quote has been heard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unironically.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's so, he's not like, I'm going to lock you up in a horrible, nasty school for evil boys or something like that.
Right.
It's just, your father wants you to have a conventional education and we're going to do that. And Mame's like, absolutely not, to the nudist colony with you.
Right. Yeah, exactly. The other end of the spectrum. It is, it does very much create, I think, a story of characters who don't make a lot of decisions. Like, this is a very observational story, you know? Yeah. Like, certainly, you're engaging with Mame, and you're, like, empathizing with her, and, like, feeling all the things she feels. But I don't know if, like, maybe If He Walked Into My Life... Is that the name of that song? If He Walked Into My Life, she has some, like, interior conflict. Maybe. Mm-hmm. That's about it. You know, Mame is not indecisive in this show.
Yeah.
Like,
there's very little, like, that is really the only point.
Yeah. Which I think makes it super powerful. You know,
it makes her super powerful.
Yeah. Like,
she's Mary Poppins.
Like, she is. She is Mary Poppins. She is otherworldly, mystical, you know.
And unstoppable.
Yeah.
Like, You at no point in this show do you think, oh God, Mame's going to change, or oh God, Mame's going to lose her flair.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
You do think, oh God, Mame's going to lose Patrick. That I think is the fear of the show. That's the mystery. That's the suspense. That's what, you know, keeps you engaged and what makes the whole dinner party scene hilarious and tense at the very end.
Absolutely. It's is she going to make this last hurrah?
Exactly. We haven't quite explained. Patrick falls in love with a boring girl. Does that seem like a good description?
Literally, that's it.
Yeah.
A rich, boring girl.
A rich, boring girl, and invites her whole family, the Uptons, over to Mame's apartment for a dinner party. First...
It's called Upton Downs, I think is funny.
Oh, man. But the Uptons, besides from being kind of boring suburbanites, are also racist.
Yes.
And Mame invites them over, you know, and is Mame, serves them, you know, baked monkey and boiled python or whatever
and
it is.
Bees.
And bees. And this one's bees. It's so funny. Accidentally, quote unquote, introduces them to Mrs. Gooch, the unmarried pregnant nanny of Patrick. Yeah. In her big old FU, tells the Uptons that she's bought the land right next to their estate and is going to turn it into a home for unmarried pregnant women, which totally disturbs them. And there is a brief moment where you think, you know, Mame might have totally lost her connection with Patrick right there. Like, this may be a step too far towards indoctrinating him in her bohemian lifestyle.
Yeah.
Of course, it's a Jerry Herman musical, so that doesn't happen. But I think that is the drama that's worth playing up in this.
Yeah, for sure. She's just, it's an amazing character. Proper celebratory, joyous being.
Yeah, absolutely. A force.
A proper force. And I don't think there are many characters as forceful this one.
I think so too. Well, this might be a good transition point.
That's what I was building to. Yes, well done for picking up.
Follow your auntie Mame. I'll make this vow, my little love, that on the last day of your life, you'll be smiling the same young smile. Your smiling now, my little love. If you wake up every morning and you pull aside the shutter and you promise me that these'll be the first words that you utter. Open a new window, open a new door, travel a new highway that's never been tried before. Before you find you're a dull fellow, punching the same clock, walking the same tightrope as everyone on the block. The fella you ought to be is three-dimensional, soaking up life down to your toes. Whenever they say you're slightly unconventional, just put your thumb up to your nose and show them how to dance to a new rhythm, whistle a new song, toast with a new vintage. The fist doesn't fist too long. There's only one way to make the bubble stay. Simply travel a new highway, dance to a new rhythm, open a new window every day.
Open a new window, open a new door, travel a new highway that's never been tried before. Before you find you a dull fellow, touching the same clock, walking the same tightrope as everyone on the block. The fella you ought to be is three-dimensional, soaking up life, counting your clothes. Whenever they say you're slightly unconventional, just put your thumb up to your nose and show them how to dance to a new rhythm, listen to a new song, close to a new vintage. The fist doesn't fist along. There's only one way to make the world the same. Simply travel a new highway, dance to a new rhythm, whistle a new
praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com.
One of the things that makes Mame so powerful is she's a non-traditional female role in musical theater. Do you think that's fair to say?
Absolutely. Especially in 1960s musical theater.
Yeah. I mean, coming right off of, you know, Jerry Herman wrote Hello, Dolly! And then wanted to write Hello, Dolly! Again and wrote Mame. And
yeah.
Right? And there's plenty of comparison you can do between Mame and Dolly. And Dolly is, of course, also a powerful female character.
Yes.
But her entire modus operandi is to marry Horace Vander Gelder. Like, her entire existence in this musical is to get married. Yep. For Mame, her love story is a tiny portion of this show.
Yep.
It's just one.
And also, she says very early on that marriage isn't on her radar. Like, it's not something she's seeking out.
Yeah.
She's just seeking out the ability to live.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that is her priority.
To that, I think there is an argument to be made that she marries Beauregard for that. I wouldn't go so far to say that she marries Beauregard for his money, but she definitely marries him to live.
For the next adventure.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. I completely, completely believe that. I don't really see their relationship as being anything too solid, anything too exciting, just in the sense that she's a lovely person who probably has a lot of love to give.
Yeah.
And is able to give that freely.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think she is like, you're the man for me. I'm ready to settle down for the rest of my life.
Yeah. I mean,
and do whatever you want.
Yeah. Like, and it's just such a tiny part of the show. Like,
absolutely.
Between Bosom Buddies and Gooch's song, like we passed the Bechdel test fully and completely in this
totally.
Show. Like, most of the songs in the show are sung by women and aren't about men.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is super progressive for 1966.
Absolutely. And it, again, it just doesn't really happen.
Yeah.
Nowadays.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, we haven't... That, I think, is perhaps one of the more baffling things, is like that this, you know, maybe because we are talking it as an adaptation and, you know, Jerome, Robert, and Jerry all got very lucky that this story was so beloved and that they were able to adapt it in the time they wrote it in. Like, you know, we can't give them all the credit for inventing MAME. But it is surprising that there aren't more... You know, we don't hit strong independent women in musical theater again in this way.
I would say Applause.
Yeah, Applause is a good example. You know, Wicked, like,
yep.
Yeah, which still has plenty of, you know, heterosexual love in it.
Yeah.
But like, the MAME is unique in that way. Like, super,
I think so.
Super feminist. Literally sticking it to the man throughout the entire show. Like, who cares?
It's just like sisters doing it for the, like, do you know what I mean? They're just, everyone wants to be MAME and Vera.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. Well, and so that is, you joked earlier, but two more gays talking about MAME. Like, they, at Musical Mondays in the gay bar in Chicago, they play Bosom Buddies, the good version between Bea Arthur and Angela Lansbury from whatever Tony's or show it is.
Yeah.
And, like, everyone loses it. Everyone tears the house down because something about it is so gay.
Yeah.
You know?
It's literally just two old queens throwing shade.
Right. Like, yeah. That's a fabulous way to put it. Like,
that's exactly what it is.
The cattiness, the, you know, we hate each other because we love each other kind of.
Like, we would be nowhere without each other.
Right. And
I know you inside out.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
It's, and that. I insult you deeply every moment we meet.
Because I love you.
Yeah, exactly.
It's great.
Which is hugely, you know, a part of gay culture. And, like, who knows how intentional all of this was. But, like, gay audiences adore MAME.
Well, I think it is intentional. I absolutely think it is. And I think it's just all because of Jerry Herrmann.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so obviously we said, this isn't Jerry Herrmann's story. This is a pure adaptation. But what attracted Jerry Herrmann to it,
right,
you know, is this... It's 100%... a gay story. And I feel like Jerry Herrmann's own narrative, we've talked about Sondheim, there's 100% an essay in this. As he progresses, he peeks more and more out of the closet. Do you know what I mean? Until we hit Lacage, and then we're
fully out.
Wigs are on the floor,
right?
But, you know, this is a really important moment for him, because this, you know, it's weird that it takes a gay man to write this feminist show.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? It couldn't have been written by
Rodgers and Hammerstein. Like,
yeah. Lesser. Yeah. You know what I mean? It couldn't, because they wouldn't get this.
Yeah.
They wouldn't get the need for this.
Yeah. And it just makes...
Because that's what I see. That's what I see MAME as.
Yeah.
And I guess Vera in a way as well. She's just a beacon.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
She's...
Well, and not to, you know, I think there is a dangerous tightrope to walk, because I never want to minimize MAME as a feminist icon and bogart it into MAME being a metaphorical representation of the gay man's journey, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And, like, I think she's certainly both.
See, I don't look at it as, like, the gay man's journey. I know there are all the parallels between Patrick and her, and, like, you know, I've read essays about MAME being the drag mother to Patrick's drag daughter and all that. I think at its heart, it is purely feminist, and it's for women, because the stories aren't there for women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And the way it works, in inverted commas, with gay culture, is we look to these wonderful sisterly relationships because that is the kind of inner femininity that we want to explore. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The inner feminine that we as gay men choose to embrace as opposed to block.
Right.
Because we all have it.
Exactly. And there aren't explicit representations of it as much or then, you know, pick your poison. And so what you have is MAME.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So it's, you know, I don't see Jerry Herman writing this as gay, you know, gay homosexual propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? I'm right. Like, I'm going to tell my story.
Yeah.
It's just like, this is the woman I want to be friends with.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. This is, you know, it's escapism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because it's so idealistic.
Yes. Yes. And especially, you know, we're talking 1960s. This is a time where, like, writing escapist literature for the theater is a bit of an act of protest.
Yeah.
And
100%, 100%. So it is. It's just beautiful. I mean, the thing is, it's like we could talk to the cows come home about MAME and the gays.
Yes, and I think the gays have for decades.
We really, really have. And it's just, yeah. I don't know. I just think it's great in that respect.
It is just fabulous in that respect.
Yeah. There's a great YouTube video series.
The all-male MAME production? No, not that one.
No, I was talking about musical theater.
I make YouTube videos sometimes in the past.
I was giving you a beautiful plug and you didn't even pick it up.
Yeah, maybe we'll put it in the show notes if you haven't watched it. I talk a long time about how musical theater is gay. I talk a lot about Jerry Herman.
Yeah, but there's loads, like, we'll kind of load up the show notes with books and essays and things like that. Because there's loads out there, and it is very interesting.
Yeah.
Because I feel like this is a big, you know, cornerstone in this world of moving musicals away from the Rodgers and Hammersteins and into the Lawrences and the Sondheims and the...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, letting
the Hermans.
Musical theater, I don't know, feel a little more.
Yeah, exactly. Just kind of be, you know, it's almost like it's allowing music theater to write the stories for the people that are watching them.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's exactly it. I mean, like, I love MAME, and I listen and watch this show, and just the concepts behind, like, Open a New Window and It's Today, and like, I find so infinitely empowering for whatever reason.
Oh, totally. It that's the thing is, like, on the side, whether you're gay or whether you're straight, whatever, it's just an exciting, powerful story.
Yeah.
Always be somebody's friends, sisters, and pals. We'll always be somebody's. If life should reject you, there's me to protect you. If I say that your tongue is vicious, if I call you uncouth, it's simply that. Who else but a somebody will say?
Okay, so this episode is, of course, sponsored by Gold Star. Tommy, tell us all about Gold Star.
Well, so I'm looking up right here. As you know, Gold Star has a bunch of tickets to live events, affordable tickets.
Yeah.
Most of their tickets are marked down from the original ones, and they have a bunch of regional tickets right here in Denver. Jimmy, I could go see Crybaby the Musical. Did you know that was a thing?
Absolutely. You're talking to a big John Waters fan right here.
Or if I wanted to put my sports hat on, they've got some Rockies tickets too, and I could go to a baseball game.
That I could tell you nothing about. if you go over and check out goldstar.com or check out the absolutely free Gold Star app, and if you are one of our first 200 listeners who use our promo code, HAPPYHOUR, then you'll get $10 off your purchase. And that's on the already marked down tickets.
Yeah, a lot of tickets on Gold Star are about 50% off. And I see that here. And it just looks great. Look at this. I could that's go amazing. See Annie.
I would go see Annie.
Yeah, would you?
We'd like to thank you, your whore. So great.
Yep, so if you use the promo code HAPPYHOUR, that's HAPPYHOUR all caps, one word, at goldstar.com/happyhour, you can get $10 off your first order. That only goes out to our first 200 listeners, so use it quick! Use it now! Run!
Use it now!
Run to your computer!
But sweetie, I'll always be Alice Toklas if you'll be Gertrude Stein. And though I'll admit I've dished you, I've gossiped and gloated, but I'm so devoted. And if I say that sex and guts made you into a star, it's simply that. Who else but a bosom buddy will tell you how rotten you are?
Speaking of gay men.
Lucille Ball?
Well, I was going to say, this, I think, is perhaps one of the biggest gay men conflict in the history of homosexuality.
Wow. I'm ready.
Jimmy, did you know they made a movie of this musical?
I did.
And do you know who starred as Mame in the movie of this musical?
That was I Love Lucy herself.
62-year-old Lucille Ball.
Yep. Yep.
And no one has forgiven anyone for this movie in years.
No, they have not. I find it reasonably fascinating and kind of funny.
Yeah.
Because, so, like, I'm actually not that attached to Mame. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Fascinating. Okay.
Yeah. Like I say, it came onto my radar in 2009. It's not like, oh, the big part of my life.
It's not a daily listen for you.
Yeah. Like, the actual musical, all the kind of stuff flying around it, the sociopolitical world of Mame.
Yeah.
I'm well loved and involved in. Yeah. But the actual show itself.
Yeah.
It's not anywhere near my top 10.
Huh.
I'm much for Hello Dolly.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
If talking Herman, I'm much for Hello Dolly. Anyway, so the movie, I hadn't watched till we were getting ready to do this. And I wouldn't mind if you could post me the 2 hours and 30 minutes or whatever that I took to watch it.
It's so bad.
It's really bad.
It's really bad. And okay, so because I've made a video about this, I made a video a long time ago, and I don't like watching it.
This is your viral sensation, Tommy.
It really was about how Angela Lansbury was robbed and Lucille Ball did an awful job in this movie. And to this day, that YouTube video still receives some of the most angry comments.
Yeah, like vitriolic. I went through them today. It was quite fun.
It is. Fascinating. How dare you insult Lucille Ball in this way? She's a comedic genius. I love her in May. And like, okay, I think first it bears saying, I think Lucille Ball is a genius.
Absolutely.
Unequivocally. I think she has defined television and a whole bunch of American culture as we know it. You know, but like even just talking about the Lucy show or I Love Lucy and Star Trek, like just take those two as paragons of entertainment, and already you've encompassed like 80% of contemporary film and television entertainment is based on or takes things from these two things that she created, basically. And she's not good in this movie. She was a poor choice, and everyone knows it. Critics knew it at the time. Angela Lansbury knew it. Jerry Herman knew it and was super insistent that it not be made. Jerry Herman, like, then refused to make any movies of his musicals again unless he had direct producing influence. Lucy herself refused to make a film ever again after this one because it went so poorly.
I think that's huge.
B. Arthur knew it was a mistake.
B. Arthur, like, there's a random little interview I found where she, like, slates it. She's like, it's the worst movie ever made.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, wow.
And I think there's a quote. Oh, I forget the metaphor she uses, but when asked about what filming it was like, Lucille Ball says it's like watching your house burn down or something like that. Like, people involved in this movie and who saw this movie hated it. And so I find it so fascinating that there is this subset of people who feel so passionately that they enjoy this. Like,
but do not just think it's just that thing.
I think I really do have difficulty unpacking this because I understand diva worship from a gay perspective. Like, that's how I am about Angela Lansbury, which is perhaps why I'm a little blinded. But, like, and, you know, there are plenty of people out there who are just gigantic Lucille Ball fans and so adore everything she does. Objectively, the movie is boring and long and poorly filmed and poorly sung and just some of it. And what makes it such a tragedy is the fact that the musical was so well received, was such a great thing, and this was a perfect chance to bring that to film. Jerry Herman was disappointed with Gene Kelly's movie of Hello, Dolly, but I think that's a pretty faithful, honest representation of the stage musical.
Love it.
It's great.
I love it.
It's wonderful.
I get the Barbra Streisand controversy, but I think the rest of it's perfect.
Exactly. MAME is not. The film of MAME is not a good representation of the musical.
No, it's not. I think, obviously in your video, you talk about, you're kind of discussing why did it fail. I think there's a number of reasons. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, the thing that I hated most about it was Gene Sachs's direction.
Yes. Yeah.
Because it doesn't exist.
No.
It's odd. It's very, very odd.
Yeah.
It almost feels at times like it's bordering on like Lynchian.
Yeah. Like
for some of the choices that I'm just like...
Intentionally obscure. Like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
For example, first scene... Mm-hmm. It's today. Why the hell does Patrick go up that banister, slide down it, and then do it again? They literally repeat the exact same thing twice, don't even change the shot. And I'm just like, that, to me, instantly, I was like, this is bad.
Yeah.
And then I couldn't get past it from there.
Yeah.
Now, I know, like, with Lucille Ball, like, we know that she's not as good a singer as Angela Lansbury.
Mm-hmm.
All good.
Right.
And to be honest, I actually don't... I don't hate her voice.
I don't hate her. I don't hate her voice. I wish... Because I rewatched it again maybe 2 days ago. It's just painful every time. but, like, there are plenty of Lady Broadway singers with weird voices who are...
Yep.
Absolutely successful. You know, B. Arthur.
B. Arthur, exactly.
Carol Channing. Like, who has a...
Rosalind Russell.
Right? Who has weirder voices than these people? And they can find ways and find vocal coaches to get through this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And Lucy just couldn't. Just couldn't. And half of you thinks, like, she's not an idiot. She must have known, right? And... So much of the production of this movie is shrouded in Hollywood gossip. So who quite knows what's real and what's rumor. But absolutely, at some point, someone raised the idea of dubbing Lucy's voice. And who knows why that didn't happen, but it doesn't seem like an unfair bet that Lucy put the kibosh on that.
Well, she put the kibosh on a few things.
Right.
Madeline Kahn.
Yeah. Oh, that's not even... Who was going to play Mrs. Gooch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would have been great.
Oh, it would have been
I really like Gooch in the film.
Yeah, I think she's one of the best parts.
She's lovely.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's... I don't know. Like, I don't fully put the blame on Lucille Ball.
No.
I don't, because apparently, you know, she wanted to do it after seeing Rosalind Russell in the film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she didn't get it for Broadway good, because that would have been good.
No.
And so she got a chance to do it in the film, but I just feel like she was given the wrong director,
mm-hmm.
and also the world had had enough of MAME.
Yeah, maybe we were just done with it by then.
You know, it was had like 5 different iterations.
Yeah. Yeah, it has quite the journey that way. And which is a shame. Like, maybe it's worth it. Well, Lucy should have just made a straight movie that was like the continued adventures of Auntie MAME.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been great.
I know. Do you know what? There were some scenes in it where I was watching.
Mm-hmm.
In particular, Need a Little Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess in a bit in It's Today.
Yeah.
Where I got Russell Crowe vibes. Weren't expecting that, were you?
What do you mean? So,
I have this thing, right?
Uh-huh.
Obviously, we all know Russell Crowe should not have been in Les Mis.
We all adore Russell Crowe in Les Mis and think he was the perfect choice.
And anyway...
I'm sorry, I didn't put my sarcasm filter on heavy enough for that, did I?
I've just had a small coronary incident. So we all know that should never have happened.
Mm-hmm.
But my heart breaks for Russell Crowe, because you watch Stars and you see fear in that man's eyes.
Yes.
And that is not acting.
Yeah.
That isn't, I'm doing this weird thing where I know that I'm doomed to die, so yeah. I'm going to play Stars as if I'm scared.
Yeah.
He's just scared because he doesn't know how to sing.
Yeah.
I
absolutely see that in It's Today. Just
right? Like, it's just like, I don't know what I'm doing.
And now we dance, and now we dance, and everyone's a better dancer than me. Yeah.
No one's given me direction.
Yeah, exactly. And I wave my hand like this. Yeah.
Yeah, she has this painted on face, and it's properly painted on.
Yes.
I just find it a little bit heartbreaking. I'm like, this is a shame.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? She's not been set up properly to do this. She's been dealt a really bad card.
Yeah.
And obviously, if, you know, she's got B. Arthur there, who obviously doesn't like her.
Right.
She's not got this kind of camaraderie or sisterhood or someone that she can go to and be like,
help. I'm, like, yeah.
Dying here.
Yeah.
Because as well, it's bloody... Is Lucille Ball.
Yeah, she should be
do
good
you know
at
what I
this.
Mean?
She should be good at anything she does, because...
Exactly.
She generally is, but...
She is good. She's absolutely great. But in this, I just feel the odds were totally stacked against her.
Yeah.
And it comes across. And it's just a bit heartbreaking. I feel really bad.
It's really sad. I get low-key sad every time
I watch
the MAME film. Just because of what could have been. There have been a lot of, even since I made my MAME video, there have been a lot of other bootlegs of the original Lansbury production that have come out. And man, it is, like, this is my time travel show. This is, if I could go back and see one original production on Broadway, it would be MAME. Because it just seems infectious and exuberant and, like, such a feel-good time. And there is no good... recreation of it, you know.
No,
there hasn't been. Even they made Lansbury came back for a revival, I think in the 70s, or the 80s, 83, and it was not well received. It just kind of lost some of its shine and some of its vigor, and probably the 80s we were beyond that.
That's it. And so I just feel like idealism.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, exactly. Oh,
we're over that.
It's going to be fine. You're going to survive the stock market crash. Okay.
Please.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're just kind of over that in our cynical adulthood. As soon as the 80s hit, it was like, no.
No.
Thank you.
Exactly. But to go back and sit there in a 1960s audience and watch this, what I wouldn't give.
I know. I just love what it did for Angela Lansbury.
Like, oh my God, she made it. Like, that's what she says in her interview. She knew she made it with
it's a beautiful interview.
Oh, man. Yeah, Angela Lansbury is my spirit animal, deeply and truly.
She is. You love her so much.
I really adore her. I adore her in this. I mean, not to gush too much, but, like, watch...
It's okay, I gush a lot.
Watch The Manchurian Candidate, watch Sweeney Todd, watch a bootleg of her in MAME, and then watch Murder, She Wrote. And, like... That's the same gosh darn actress. Yeah. It's insane. And, like, not in the way that, like, ooh, Johnny Depp always plays a stupid, bizarre character and is different every time. Like, Angela Lansbury is very clearly herself, but has broken, like, is versatile and, like Patrick Stewart. Like, you know.
Meryl Streep,
yeah. Versatile. Able to take on anything, so poised and then just so sweet and kind. Deeply and truly, I care for Angela Lansbury.
And after you've watched all those, watch her massage video.
Yeah, put that away. We don't talk about that.
Yes, we do. I'm sorry. If I didn't have that, I would not be able to jiff.
I have no response.
It's so good. I actually kind of like it.
I will never watch it.
It's sexy.
I will never watch it.
You've never seen it?
I am aware of it and have seen bits and pieces, and I will never watch it.
Oh my Christ. No way, you've never seen it?
Mm-mm.
That is going to be like my Clockwork Orange moment for you.
It's probably one of the few pieces of Angela Lansbury literature Media. That I haven't experienced.
It is pure literature. It's so good. It's really good. And I think it was probably quite effective.
I believe it. It's just like,
You don't want to see her in a bath?
I didn't know it existed for a very long time and had experienced her as like mild-mannered Jessica Fletcher on Murder, She Wrote. And like, it's just, you know, it was a step too far for my childhood brain. And I feel like I'm going to have some Freudian break if I watch it.
She's a sexy woman.
She is.
Nobody can deny.
Angela Lansbury is a sexy woman. No one can deny. Give me the t-shirt right now.
Absolutely. It's definitely going to show notes.
Everyone else can watch it.
You can. Oh, I'm so sad you're missing out.
Open a new window. Open a new door. Travel a new highway that's never been tried before.
Toast to the new day, come, listen to the new song. Toast to the new vintage, the faces and taste are long. There's only one way to make the bubble stay. Simply travel a new highway, dance to a new rhythm.
Time to hustle, fight on.
promise that was Mame.
That you can, Jimmy. You know they only named it Mame because Angela Lansbury told them to.
Here's my hat, fellas.
I know, it's the same song. Not
it's
to mention,
the same.
We've talked about it all the time, but Need a Little Christmas and It Takes a Woman.
It's literally the same.
Yeah, and I can never remember the name of the song, but they cut a song from Mame that is the new song.
And put it into the movie.
No, and put it into Hello, Dolly.
Yeah, that's what I mean, into the whole Dolly movie.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
They're just the same show. Mame, Dolly.
I know.
No, they're not. They're very different, despite having very many structural similarities.
And musical similarities. Anyway, enough about that. You've had your dreams. It is time for mine.
That was intense.
That was quite intense. That was good. We should act. Tommy, I have a quiz question for you.
We should act. What's your quiz question?
Okay. So, hey, this music, again, did we ever do questions, or have they always been statements?
You want to just call them quiz statements from now on? We got a quiz statement for you.
The Quaitment.
The Quaitment.
I hate it. This musical was partially inspired by a New York Pilates studio on 181st Street.
Dun, dun, dun. It's Pilates the Musical.
What is it? Bonne chance.
If you want to get in contact with us, I'm Musical Mash on Twitter and Musical Theater Mash on YouTube.
And I am As In Hendrix over on Twitter. I don't do YouTube anymore, so I'm not going to keep posting that. You can see if you want.
Or you can check out our show Twitter at Jim and Tomic, or you can go to the website jimandtomic.com, which has a link to the Reddit discussion where you can talk about Mame.
Yeah, much to Tommy's light. Maybe Tommy will come to Reddit for this one.
Maybe.
He promises nothing. Yes, if you would like to support the podcast, you can also find the link to our Patreon on the website as well.
And we'll see you next time.
Yes, indeed. Goodbye now.
Toodaloo, buckaroo.
In a while. Took a while.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.